Welcome to the Campbell Conversations. In this year's midterm elections, the down-ballot races could prove very important for the future of New York State. And in particular, the races for state Senate may supply the political fulcrum for what political direction the state takes. My guests today are the two candidates vying to represent New York's 53rd Senate District. Janet Berman is the Republican. She's an economist and a former district administrator for the State Workers' Compensation Board. Rachel May is the Democrat. She recently defeated incumbent Senator Dave Valesky in the Democratic primary. She's currently the coordinator of sustainability education at Syracuse University. The 53rd Senate District consists of Madison County and parts of Oneida and Onondaga counties, including the majority of the city of Syracuse. A brief note on our format. This is a debate, but it's structured more as a shared conversation that will emphasize differences. There are no opening or closing statements, and there is no timer for responses. But I'll make sure that each candidate gets a fair chance to participate. I've also asked each candidate to be brief and to try to answer the question posed, and I may intervene if they are not. Ms. May, Ms. Berman, thanks to the two of you for making the time to be with me today.
Oh, thank you, Grant, for arranging this.
Yes, this is a terrific opportunity.
Well, thanks to you again. There are tons of issues, obviously, that we could explore, and we could explore them for hours. And in this half hour, what I want to try to do is to focus on some specific issues that I think are likely to come up in next year's legislative session. So first, I want to devote some time to health care for a variety of reasons. The debate in the state over whether to switch to a single-payer, state-run system for everyone, I think, has become a focal point in the struggle over which party will control the state Senate. And I think this race is at the center of that struggle. So, Rachel May, you've indicated in the past on this program your support for the New York Health Act, and this would establish that single-payer system that I just alluded to. It's already been passed in the state assembly. And in fact, on this program, you criticized the incumbent Democrat, Dave Valesky, for not working actively enough in support of it. Governor Cuomo, the governor you're most likely to be working with if you're elected, has expressed some doubts about this plan and has argued that something like this better done at the federal level rather than the state level. So let me start with you on this question about this particular aspect of health care. Ms. May, why is this single-payer plan a good idea? And tell us a little bit more about how you will be making passage of this act a priority in your first term.
Okay. Yeah. Thanks for that question, Grant. So the governor's right. It would be better done at the federal level. But what's happening at the federal level is actually the opposite. The leadership is actively undermining the Affordable Care Act. They are trying to bring back the bad old days when people could be barred from insurance because of pre-existing conditions. They're trying to bring back lifetime caps on insurance. And we are seeing premiums going up and deductibles going up and people just generally being very dissatisfied. I've been talking to small business people, to farmers who are really struggling to get affordable health care for themselves and their employees. And we're seeing a lot of businesses are shifting to hiring people part-time or gig workers just to avoid having to pay health insurance benefits because it's so expensive. So the New York Health Act isn't perfect. It needs hearings. It needs to be phased in ways that can make it work. But I think it's a really important thing for New York to take the lead in making sure that there's health insurance for all New Yorkers. And the way it's designed, it would save considerable money for the state in terms of compared to what we pay now, if you add up all the premiums we're paying and all of the all those deductibles and the other costs of prescription drugs, because the state would be able to negotiate prescription drug prices statewide, and because we would internalize a lot of the expenses that are now no one party can realize, but expenses related to overuse of emergency rooms, for example, or the lack of preventive care for people who go on to have crises that are very expensive to treat. So there's a lot of ways that I think it would save money, but it would also be the right thing to do, and it would take away some of the big distortions in our employment landscape and a lot of the worries, the people who are going bankrupt because of insurance bills and that sort of thing, that, you know, there are a lot of ways that our current system distorts our economy and our way of life.
So, Ms. Berman, do you see problems in this plan or you have concerns about this single-payer option?
Yes. My experience in speaking with voters is that they're concerned about the costs right now under Obamacare. And the fact that Obamacare and New York state laws prohibit some innovative solutions to health care that would be more cost effective and would provide better care. For instance, there's a group of doctors operating in Harlem, African-American doctors who want to serve the community and wanted to set up a clinic operation where members of the community would pay a subscription fee, a modest subscription fee for care at the clinic. And New York State came in and said, no, you cannot do that. That's like an insurance plan, and you're not licensed to be insurers. You know, other innovative solutions, you know, such as competition, when you are looking at insurance coverage, not allowed out of state, looking at policies. It's more difficult to take advantage of some of the faith-based health cost-sharing programs that exist. And, you know, the fact that we have the state paying for health care does not ensure that our citizens will have access to health care. I mean, even right now, it's very difficult, and it has been since before Obamacare, to have access to specialists, particularly, say, in the area of dermatology. In our region, you know, there's a shortage in a lot of specialty areas. The reason there's a shortage in a lot of specialty areas is because we have some of the highest taxes in the country. I know personally a couple of anesthesiologists, husband and wife, who were being recruited by Upstate to come here from Pennsylvania. They were up for their second set of interviews. They really liked the area. They liked the people. They liked the structure at the hospital. And but in the middle of all the negotiations, they received a telephone call from their financial advisor who informed them that by moving to New York State, it would cost them $40,000 more in income taxes. Mm. Needless to say, they didn't accept the job. And that kind of disadvantage in recruiting the best healthcare practitioners to our region, we need to get rid of. And that is my primary focus, looking at how we lower taxes across the board in New York State.
So, Ms. May, what about this issue of the supply of providers? Do you see the single-payer system helping with the problem that Ms. Berman just brought up about the way things work now in New York State?
Well, we definitely have a shortage of doctors. We especially, I think, have a shortage of primary care physicians. And the New York Health Act takes that into account. There's a lot of provision for training people to enter the healthcare arena, not so much as doctors, but in the support system. But also, I've talked to a lot of medical students here and doctors who really are frustrated by the fact that you become a doctor because you want to help people, but people come into your office and the first question you have to ask them is, how are you going to pay for it? They want to go to a system where they're asking, how can I help you? What can I do for you? What do you need? And so the medical students I talk to are excited by the idea of practicing in a much more humane system than what we have now. We have to work out things like compensation. That's just a, you know, clearly going to be an issue down the road. And one of the reasons we haven't had hearings about this is because it's been blocked in the state Senate. So I want to get into the state Senate and have a Democratic majority that can start hearing these issues and really figuring it out.
I'm Grant Reher, and you're listening to a debate between Rachel May and Janet Berman, the two candidates vying for the state Senate in New York's 53rd district. I want to stick with this issue, and Ms. May, I want to stick with you here, and then we'll come back and hear from Ms. Berman, because this is such a big question. It really is. And here's, I think, one obvious worry about making this change, and that is that this system is going to be huge, and it's going to be run by New York State, okay? So Can you give me an example of a really large-scale program that you think the state currently runs well?
Well, first of all, let me correct that, because
okay.
It would be the financing would be run by New York State, but the medical side of it would not. So this isn't like a national health system that you have in England, for example. This is the healthcare system we still have, but a financing system that is much more sensible with a single payer.
Explain then how that system is managed and governed if it's not going to be ultimately through the state. Who's going to sit on top of this, and how's that going to be done?
The idea is to pool the resources that are brought in now from Medicaid, Medicare, and the amounts that we're already paying for insurance, although it would be lower than what we're paying now, and pool all of that so that we can set, as I said, drug prices and other parameters for how people pay for their medical care and how the payments are made. But it isn't going to be dictating who practices or how they practice. Those we'll still have the system that we have.
So, but who's going to manage that system? You said the state would do the financing. Who's going to manage the delivery and the care ultimately? Somebody has to have authority over this in a system like that.
My understanding is that the financing of it, how you pay for it, it doesn't have to be dictating how the system is managed, so that doctors could still, you know, hospitals would still be able to make decisions for their own, for themselves, that sort of thing.
Given the limits of what
right.
the state is providing them for funding.
Right.
So in that sense, the state is, okay.
But again, you know, this is the kind of thing that we need to have hearings about. We need to hear from all of the interested parties, and there are a lot of them. I just feel like right now we're paying a lot in our insurance bills for high CEO salaries and for high prescription drug prices and a lot of things that aren't being regulated or looked at and aren't delivering better care to people.
So, Ms. Berman, I'm going to let you come back in on this. So is what you're hearing here, is there a problem in your view about how this thing is going to be managed and whether the state will be ultimately the final manager of this system that now is redirecting Medicaid and Medicare funds into this huge pool?
Well, inevitably the state will be controlling the delivery of the system as well, not just the financing. Right now in New York State, almost a third of the population is under Medicaid. And as such, the state specifies, you know, what types of services are covered, you know, appropriate levels of care, you know, what the reimbursement rates are, et cetera. So, you know, that is state directed. Now, we happen to have one of the most generous states in providing health care opportunities for our less fortunate population, less fortunate financially population. You know, I've found, you know, in some of the lower income communities, they're still facing the access issue. You know, they can't get into the doctors. There are a lot of doctors who won't accept Medicaid patients. So, you know, that's not benefiting them in the way it was intended. My approach to dealing with low income populations would be to provide significantly more funding to community health centers. And working with our congressional representatives in making sure, you know, there's adequate federal funding, you know, underwriting medical school fellowships and things like that to get the doctors placed in the lower income communities. So, you know, there are programs that are designed to do that, and we want to be sure that at the federal level they're providing enough incentive and funding to bring doctors into the lower income communities. You know, the other thing is, and Rachel and I both cite the RAND study. You know, they're looking at, she cites the ultimate conclusion, which is if you add up all the money that's being spent now privately and publicly, in the long run, it will be more efficient. However, they do point out that in the immediate term, state income taxes will have to double. All right, we're already driving people out of the state with our taxes. And the notion of every citizen having to look at a huge increase in state income taxes is going to destroy this, you know, particularly upstate. The only state in the entire country that actively considered going to single-payer health care, Vermont, they abandoned the plan once they had a full understanding of what it was going to cost. We can't afford to do this. And furthermore, even if we could afford it, it's the whole accessibility question only becoming worse and worse and worse for our state relative to the states surrounding us. We have to address health care delivery in this state more so than who's paying for it. And that is my emphasis.
You're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. I'm Grant Reher, and I'm talking with Janet Berman and Rachel May. They're the two candidates running for the state Senate seat in New York's 53rd District. Ms. May, I want to come back to you about this, though, and still ask this question, because, again, the state's going to be heavily involved in this one way or another, whether it's the vision that you had about more about financing and that mechanism or what Ms. Berman is suggesting. Can you give me, though, an example? I'd like to hear. Do you think, give me an example of a really large-scale program right now that you think the state runs well?
So basically what we're talking about is Medicare for all. So Medicare is a system. I recognize the state doesn't run it, but it works pretty well. And it doesn't dictate what doctors do or who they are or where they practice. It really dictates how they get paid. But at the state level,
Give me an example of a program the state runs well, because a lot of voters are hearing this and they're just thinking, I just don't trust the state to do this. So where does the state do something where we can point to and say, see, it'll be like this?
Okay. The state, I think, does a good job with running our park system and a lot of environmental conservation efforts. We really have done quite a good job with protecting open space, and I think that is a big statewide, very expensive effort that we do, and we do it pretty well. Yeah. I agree that we need to do better. I think this is part of what the Democrats are about. If we can actually have control of the state Senate, we can start really moving in the direction of good government, which has not been, I think, the emphasis in Albany so much. So I see this as part and parcel of a more general movement toward better ethics reform, better campaign finance reform and election reform, changing our criminal justice system so that it's more responsive and more equitable, and our school funding. There are a lot of things that, you're right, we don't do well now, and it's one of the reasons why I'm running now, because I think we have an opportunity to really make a difference in a lot of spheres.
So, Ms. Berman, do you see a danger there in this vision that's being put forward by Ms. May?
Well, first of all, coincidentally, if I were going to think of a state program that works, Parks did pop into my head.
Big jump between parks and health care for the entire
exactly,
state.
Exactly,
exactly. Go ahead.
Yeah, but, I want to address this notion of Democratic control of the state Senate, because the last time the Democrats were in control of the state Senate, they increased taxes by $14 million. They imposed, hundreds of new fees and taxes in the state, and they took away one of the star rebate check payments to property owners. That's not the direction people in this district want to see state government go in. And higher taxes is not where we need to go. If I look at the states surrounding New York, all right, just dealing with New England, they provide the obligations of state government in a social safety net, in well-maintained roads, public education, they protect the environment, And all these states do it at significantly lower cost than New York State. What that points to is our citizens are paying for huge inefficiencies in state government. And so there is plenty of opportunity to significantly lower our taxes and still meet the obligations that we as a state think are important to meet in state government.
If you've just joined us, you're listening to the Campbell Conversations on WRVO Public Media. And my guests are Rachel May and Janet Berman. They're the candidates for New York's 53rd State Senate District seat. We could keep going on this, but we're actually in the latter part of our program, so I want to try to move on to another couple issues if I can. This is another health-related issue, but I think it's likely to come up next year, and that's the Reproductive Health Act. And this is to codify the abortion provisions and rights of Roe versus Wade into state law. So, Ms. Berman, would you be in favor of passing this?
Let me correct a misperception about the Reproductive Health Act.
All right.
It is not a mere codification of Roe versus Wade.
All right.
It goes well beyond Roe versus Wade. It would allow abortion up until a moment before birth. It would allow abortion for, which I do oppose, except in the case of the health of the mother. It would allow abortion for sex selection, abortion, you know, for almost any reason at all. And, you know, Roe versus Wade permits reasonable restrictions on abortion. New York would have zero restrictions on abortion. Furthermore, the Reproductive Health Act allows for non-physicians to perform abortions. And to me, that is a dangerous move with regards to the health of women. You know, we should not have anyone other than a physician performing abortions. It's very misleading to present the Reproductive Health Act as simply a codification of Roe versus Wade. Furthermore, and this has been noted in a study by the University of Albany Law School, when people were upset, concerned about abortion rights in New York with the confirmation hearings of Brett Kavanaugh, there were, claims being made that, his appointment is going to cause the end of abortion. That would not happen. Now, I don't need to address what he said or his views or anything else. I simply point out that New York state law allowed abortion before the Roe versus Wade ruling. So anything happening in the Supreme Court is not going to take away abortion in New York state. And again, this was addressed in the University of Albany study.
Ms. May, I imagine you have some things you want to say in response to that.
I do. Yeah. So it's true.
And we're beginning to run short on time. Just a heads up to the two of you.
So our abortion law was made before Roe versus Wade was decided, and that means that abortion is lodged in the criminal code in New York State instead of in the public health code. And I want to move it into the public health code. I fully support the Reproductive Health Act, and I have met with one family that had to go all the way to Colorado to end a pregnancy that was threatening both the mother's health and the fetus was non-viable, but they couldn't terminate it here. So it made their lives miserable for a very long time to have to do that, and they're very strong advocates for the option of later term abortion, which is not something that women choose because they want to do it. It's something almost, it's always a crisis situation of some sort.
What about this issue of sex selection that Ms. Berman brought up? Is that something that this act will indeed allow?
I do not believe that. I think that's a red herring issue. I really don't believe that that's something that we are seeing or that we need to concern ourselves with. But the Supreme Court is definitely something we need to concern ourselves with. We now have five very conservative men, two of whom have been credibly accused of sexual assault. And more importantly than that, they were apparently fine with seeing the women who accused them be silenced. I think that bodes very ill for the rights of women moving forward in the United States. And so New York State needs to act strongly to assert the rights of women here in our state.
we've only got a couple minutes left, but let me try to squeeze one more thing in if possible. So this is going to be sort of like a lightning round of sorts. But another issue I think that is likely to come up is the 2% cap on property taxes. That will, I think, be reexamined again. Ms. Berman, should the state continue with this limit on local governments and school districts in the way that it's currently doing?
Absolutely. And furthermore, I support the state taking over the full responsibility for Medicaid expenses. So
from the counties.
Yes, yeah. Thus allowing the counties to provide immediate reductions in property taxes.
And Ms. May, you'll have the last word on this, I think.
I also believe we need to reduce property taxes, and we need to do it especially upstate by both reducing the amount of Medicaid we're paying for, which is something the New York Health Act would help with, but also by shifting toward a more progressive income tax where we move more of our state expenditures away from local taxes and into state income tax.
And if you're faced with the question of do we continue with this cap, then you're in favor of it? Because some school districts have
objected. I've been hearing from a lot of town managers and things that it's really difficult. In Madison County, they're running up against that all the time, and it's extremely difficult. It's not a 2% cap. It's set at the rate of inflation, which has meant it's been way below 2% in recent years. And it's been
2% or the rate of inflation, whichever is lower, right?
So right. It's been a very, very difficult thing for them to maintain their services under that. So I've heard from a lot of Republican town supervisors that this is a very difficult thing for them. So I think we need to take a look at it.
Unfortunately, we'll have to leave it there. We're out of time for at least this portion of the conversation. That was Janet Berman and Rachel May. Again, the election is November 6th. Thanks to both of you for talking with me.
Thank you, Grant.
Thank you.
For a continuation of the conversation that you've just heard, please go to WRVO.org and please tune in again to WRVO Public Media for more conversations in the public interest. Welcome to this additional portion of the Campbell Conversations. We're continuing the debate between Janet Berman and Rachel May. They're the two candidates for the 53rd State Senate District seat. Janet Berman is the Republican candidate. Rachel May is the Democratic candidate. We just really barely scratched the surface of all the things we might talk about in the broadcast portion of our conversation. Let me try to, at least in the brief time that we have for this extra portion, cover a couple more topics. The governor has pushed for something called a new red flag gun control law, under which teachers, school administrators, and parents could ask a judge to prevent people who are they deem to be a danger to themselves or others from buying or possessing firearms. Now, Ms. May, on this program in the past, the individual interview that I had with you earlier this year, I believe you expressed support for more gun control measures. According to the critics of this particular bill, the hearings that this bill calls for can be held without the person at issue present, and the burden of proof is probable cause. So is this bill something that you would support in the first legislative session, or do you see problems with this?
Honestly, I don't know the legal details of it, so I would have to take a look at that. So in theory, I support it, but I would need to look at the details of it.
Okay. Ms. Berman, do you have any thoughts about this bill that's been proposed?
Yes, I have some real concerns about stripping someone of their Second Amendment rights without their being present at a hearing. And, I think that is unconstitutional. And, it's not a step we should be taking in New York. I share the concerns that many have expressed about the mental health, issues that surround problems with shootings. And I think it's very important that as a community we do all that we can to identify individuals who should not be anywhere near firearms or any other type of weapon. So, that type of effort I applaud, and we need to do more. We also need to do considerably more funding for mental health services in New York State. Hutchings is under constant threat of being closed, and that's just, unacceptable. You know, we need to have the resources to help people with mental difficulties.
Let me stick with you, move to another issue. Economic development programs in the state. They've been extremely controversial, I think, in recent years for a variety of different reasons, and they've attracted criticism from both sides of the political aisle. So, Ms. Berman, what's your view on how the state is approaching economic development? What are the problems that you see with it, if any, and what kinds of changes would you like to make?
Well, the current system is you know, fraught with incentives for corruption, and that's just not acceptable. What I feel we need to do is level the playing field, lower taxes for everyone in the state. And I feel that an existing company that's looking to expand, an existing company that's considering leaving the state, or a company that we're trying to recruit in the state should all be treated the same way in terms of taxes.
Ms. May, what's your view on the
economic development approach that we've done too much in the way of marquee projects where we come in and we pick one industry or one project and pour a lot of money into it. And as Janet said, that promotes corruption and doesn't always serve the general interest. And so I think we need to beef up infrastructure. We need to make, as she said, a playing field, but a playing field where everybody can succeed. So we need a universal broadband, for example. I'm hearing that when I'm out in rural areas. People say, you know, I've got a business, but I can't even process online payments because I don't have the bandwidth to do that. So really, we need to support transportation, water infrastructure, and things like broadband and, I think, green energy. So a lot of infrastructure. So these things cost money. We are clearly, you know, we have thousands of bridges that need repair. We have a lot of roads that are not in good repair. And so just cutting taxes doesn't seem to be a way to make it easier for people to succeed in this area. I think we need to look at upstate taxes because they are property taxes are really onerous here because our property values are so low. So we need to set high rates of tax in order to raise the money that we need here. So this is why I want to shift more to a more progressive income tax statewide. People at the highest levels in the top percent of earners have reaped enormous benefits. They've gone from having something like 12% of the wealth 40 years ago to close to 40% of the wealth now. So we have room for a more progressive income tax structure and to shift some of our state spending from property taxes.
One of the issues that I think is embedded in some of the things that you're saying, and I wanted to get both of your takes on this, is when it comes to things like economic development, but other kinds of programs too, infrastructure you mentioned, is this tension, I think, between thinking about and arguing over what's better for the whole state, which is what you're articulating right now, and this is the problem with the economic development programs as you see it, and I think it's something that Ms. Berman also was bringing up, but then also the fact that you're representing a specific district, a geographic district, and all things being equal, you want to bring whatever's done to that area. And I think that dynamic is some of the in play in terms of understanding how we get things like the Hunger Games and these other kinds of mechanisms that seem to choose either particular areas or particular industries or even particular projects. How are you going to negotiate that? Because the people here in the 53rd district are going to want you to be bringing some of that stuff back, but you have to, in a sense, almost set that aside to say, this is what everyone needs. This is going to be best for everyone. How do you navigate that?
Well, this is why I'm running for office, in part, because we've seen Senator Valesky's pretty good at bringing in member items and delivering pork to the district, and that's an important role of a state senator. I think it's almost sure that the Democrats are going to have a majority starting in January and that I would be in a position to bring in a lot of member items to this district, and I would take that very seriously. But what we haven't been doing is enacting the policy around that, the policy context where we can really succeed as a region and as a state. And so really thinking through some of the issues of corruption, for example, which I think do hinder us statewide in terms of economic development, thinking through the issues of poverty. Our concentrated poverty here in Syracuse is holding back the whole region from our ability to grow and thrive and attract businesses and attract people to come live here. So, you know, we need policy as well as member items.
Ms. Berman, I heard in some of what you were saying a similar kind of theme, in that when you emphasize the importance of lowering taxes overall and creating a different kind of playing field for all the different corporations and business entities, how would you be negotiating the same tension then of, okay, there's that is important, but I also want to bring things back to the district when they're available?
Well, one of the things I want to balance my economic development approach with is workforce development. And because if you want quality companies expanding and locating here, you need to have the trained workforce ready for them. And this is an opportunity in dealing with workforce development to help us in addressing the concentrated poverty in our community. I am appalled by the lack of leadership that's been shown with regards to our poverty here, not just in the city, but also rural areas. But, you know, we should be ashamed that year after year, you know, we are reported as the highest concentration of African-American and Hispanic poverty in the country. It's absolutely unacceptable. I talk about things that are unacceptable, but that's probably the most unacceptable thing that's taking place. Now, you know, I've done a lot of work volunteering for human service organizations, and I know that we have fantastic resources that we can bring to bear on this problem, but it's not being coordinated, it's not being led. And so that's probably the area I want to focus most in terms of bringing in extra funding and working with our mayor, the assembly members, and our county executive in getting a real program together where we take advantage. You know, we have the literacy people in, you know, talking about what they can do in this area. We have, you know, child care solutions in talking about how we can provide child care to the impoverished who are trying to, you know, get the training, learn, start jobs, but they need quality child care. So there are all these aspects that need to be integrated and brought to bear on that problem. And I think it's solvable. And I want to take a strong leadership role in that area.
Let me stick with you and move to the final topic here for this extra section of the debate that we're putting online. And that is this question of corruption and the way the political system works and the structure of our election and campaign system. This is likely, I think, also to come up on the agenda next year. And it's something that has been a perennial topic of concern and political discussion. So, Ms. Berman, do you have a set of changes that you would want to see made in how, for lack of a better term, the political system in the state functions, either there in Albany or more generally in terms of campaigns and elections?
I would certainly sponsor legislation that prohibits campaign contributions from any entity or any individual that does business with the state. That's the first step. Now, what that's going to do is it's going to radically reduce campaign budgets, which I think is perfectly fine. I mean, we have enough of you know, the negative ads, everything else, the slick mailers, you know, put forth by both parties. And, you know, I think that is the primary incentive for corruption, to have people who are doing business with the state also fund candidates. So that's the first thing I would do. I also support term limits. I don't have a specific number of terms in mind. I am looking forward to, you know, working on building a consensus on what that would be. Because that's the only way we're going to get term limits through, if we, you know, get a consensus on a number of terms. And again, you know, what we were doing that I proposed with economic development. So, you know, there are no big chunks of money that an individual in state government has control over distributing. Also combine that with the Senate Republicans' proposal to have an open database of state contracts so everything is transparent. You know, how much money is going and who's getting it. Exactly like that.
Ms. May, do you agree with what you just heard, and are there things you'd add to it?
I am in favor of campaign finance reform going much farther than that. I support public financing of campaigns because I believe if the taxpayers are paying for the campaigns, then the politicians are beholden to the taxpayers and not to the big donors.
But that would have to be some kind of voluntary scheme, or otherwise we're going
to
run into.
But in New York City, they do. They have a system. In Seattle, there are some very, very good systems that are going on, being tried all parts of the country, and they work. And they work to take that, the influence of big money out. Right now, we have the highest campaign limits on statewide offices of any state in the country. So the amount an individual can give to the governor's campaign, for example, is higher than any place in the country. And we can bring those down. There's no reason why we can't bring those down and then close that LLC loophole that allows you to just form limited liability corporations ad infinitum to keep contributing more and more and more to a campaign. Those have to go. But more generally, I also support transparency. I support much more transparency about how legislation is crafted and how, for not just hearings, but the three men in a room thing in Albany is really outdated and just has, well, there's going to be a woman in the room, I think, starting in January. But even so, we need to open that room up, open the doors and windows, and really stop doing things behind closed doors. And then the Joint Commission on Public Ethics has got to be independently constituted and not political appointees so that we actually have some way to review public ethics as well.
And final word, Ms. Berman, on this. Did you just hear anything from Ms. May that you would object to there and the things that she's adding?
Well, I clearly I'm not for public financing of campaigns. It's just another tax burden we're looking to in New York State. I did note with interest her reference to looking at best practices around the country for how things are being done. And that is certainly an approach that I'd like us to take. But I want to look at best practices with regards to making government operations more efficient and less costly.
We'll have to leave it there again. Again, there were tons of things that we could have been talking about for much greater length. But I want to just thank the two of you again for making the time, not only to talk during the broadcast portion, but for this. And I also want to thank the two of you for the civility in the way that you engage with each other. It's in short supply these days.
I think we're trying to set an example for the other campaigns. Right, Rachel?
Yeah. And I'm grateful to you, Janet, for having pushed back against the Republican Party's desire to make this a negative campaign. I really appreciate that.
Thank you.
On that very positive and hopeful note, we will conclude. Again, you've been listening to a debate between the two candidates for New York State District 53 in the upcoming midterms, Janet Berman, the Republican, Rachel May, the Democrat. Thanks for listening.